This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Patrick Clancy walked into a quiet house on January 24th of 2023. He'd been gone maybe 30 minutes. He called out to his wife and got no answer. He called down to the basement, nothing. Tried Lindsay's phone at around 6.09 p.m., no answer. He checked the kids' bedrooms empty, checked the bathrooms empty, then got to the primary bedroom and the door was locked. He told the jury in Plymouth Superior Court that in that moment he knew something was wrong. He found a key that had been taped behind another bedroom door. He unlocked it, and what Patrick Clancy walked into was a room covered in blood. A pool of it in the center of the floor, sprayed across surfaces, smeared on the doorknob, and a window wide open, wind blowing in. He moved one or two steps into that room and then turned around and went outside. Lindsay was lying on her back beneath the bedroom window. She had deep cuts on her wrists and a red line across her neck. She told him she'd tried to end it. He asked her where the kids were. She said in the basement. She did not say they were hurt. She did not say they were in danger. She did not say they needed help. Patrick Clancy called 911. That seven-minute call was played for the jury on July 29th inside Plymouth Superior Court. The judge had ruled it could be played in court, but not broadcast out to the public. So we haven't heard it. You haven't heard it. Unless you were in that courtroom, you didn't hear it. Patrick was also not in the courtroom when the jury heard it. The judge let him step aside. During the first part of the call, you can hear Patrick trying to keep Lindsay conscious. Keep your eyes open. Look at me. Say my name. You can hear Lindsay moaning and struggling to speak. Once first responders arrived and began working on Lindsay, Patrick stayed on the line and went to the basement. He found Cora first, 5 years old, face down, an exercise band around her neck. He untied it. She was unresponsive. Then he saw 8-month-old Callan next to her, also with an exercise band around his neck. He looked for 3-year-old Dawson and found him in the home office. Same thing, an exercise band around his neck. Patrick went back and forth between his 3 children, attempting CPR on each of them until first responders took over. On that call, you can hear Patrick Clancy screaming, "She killed the kids." The dispatcher repeats it back to him. She killed the kids. Lindsay Clancy sat at the defense table in her wheelchair. For most of the recording, she was quiet, but by the end of the 911 call, she was openly sobbing, face in her hands. Multiple jurors were visibly shaken. If you don't believe that this woman was affected by this, go watch the video. Judge William Sullivan called a recess. A veteran reporter from Boston 25, who's covered trials for 43 years, walked into the hallway and said it was one of the worst things he's ever heard. Before the day was over, the prosecution also walked 9 prescription bottles in front of that jury, many of them still full of pills. They think those bottles prove Lindsay Clancy wasn't really over-medicated. They think those bottles win them the case. I'll get to what those bottles actually prove in a minute, because it wasn't what the prosecution thinks. But first, let me say this. If you're following this case, if you want to follow this case, we have audio for you every single day on our podcast platforms. The link right there. If you're watching us on YouTube, follow that. Get our show in the podcast form, audio form, and you will get all of the audio from the court every single day, so you can take it with you, listen wherever you are going around. Just check out that that QR code right there. It'll take you to the podcast. And press subscribe wherever you're listening right now as we break all this down. And I welcome your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. There's a wide array of opinions on this case. And look, I mean, all of them are valid, and all of them come from our own prisms of experience. some can understand how this very much was postpartum psychosis, what the brain does when taken on and off this many medications, the argument of she didn't take all of them doesn't really make a damn bit of difference. You take some of these, you take a few of them, you take this, you mix, you match, you don't have one doctor knowing what the other one's doing, and you put these things into your body, and guess what? All of the side effects that you hear in those fast-talking commercials, they can come true. They're not there for no reason. It's not just a bunch of witchery of this will never take place. No, you hear those fast talkings. Taking this drug may cause ... And then when you mix it with 13 other ones, and then you mix in what's going on with Lindsay by herself, take the drugs out of the equation. The prosecution's going to have to prove that she was in her right mind. I don't know how you do that for anyone if you understand what these drugs do when not taken as directed, or even when taken as directed, or take the drugs out of the equation when someone's suffering in the state that she was suffering in. I don't see how any of that ends to, she was making rational decisions. She was in her right mind. I just don't. I don't see how you get there. There's plenty of cases where people do horrible things, and I see how you get there. That's why you can never do a broad brush on any of these cases, because it is so, everyone is unique. Everyone's their own snowflake, if you will. Here's a detail that the prosecution hasn't explained, and the defense is going to be riding all the way to the verdict. About a week after the killings, Lindsay Clancy called Patrick from her hospital bed. She told him that on January 24th, she heard a man's voice. She said the voice told her that if she didn't do it now, she would lose her chance. According to defense attorney Kevin Reddington, when Lindsay came out of her medically induced coma, she told a hospital staffer about command voices before she ever spoke with a defense expert. The prosecution is disputing that timeline, but it's there, and the jury heard Patrick say it under oath. Now, the prosecution called Patrick Clancy as their star witness, if you will. He is the centerpiece of their case. They put the father of those three dead children on the stand first because he is the most sympathetic human being in that courtroom. They wanted the jury's first impression to be his grief, his loss, and the horror of what he discovered. And what they got instead across two full days of testimony was a portrait of a woman in free fall that nobody caught. Patrick testified that after the birth of their third child, Callan Lindsay went into what he called a spiral, worsening depression. Insomnia is so severe, she went 48 straight hours without sleeping. Heart palpitations, she had suicide, you know, those sort of thoughts. She told Patrick she was having intrusive thoughts about something bad happening to the kids. He testified that he asked her what she needed, whether she needed to be kept away from them, and she said no. He said he didn't think she would ever harm them. And I'll tell you what, when you're in that position, it's a hard one to contemplate when you're the dad. You don't think that person would ever do anything until they do. Anyone who's ever been in a situation with someone that's making threats should take it seriously. It's easier to be like, well, maybe they don't mean it. Maybe it's on the edge. Maybe they're just speaking out of turn. Maybe they're angry. Maybe they're this. Maybe they're that. Maybe they're not. maybe if they're saying that sort of shit out loud, they mean it. Would you just throw that stuff around out there willy-nilly? No? Okay. Other people probably are not either. This is not an indictment on him at all. I get it. I get being in that position. I get hearing those sort of things and thinking, well, maybe this is the you try to downplay. You do. A lot of times you do, especially if it's your first rodeo on something like that. You try to do the best with what you know. And that's honest to God, when I hear him trying to manage this in his mind, that's what I hear. He's doing the best. I mean, can he look back and is there 1,000 things I'm sure he'd look back on and say, I might do that differently? I'm sure there are. But when confronted with extreme behavior, extreme thoughts, discombobulated mental madness, and you're not a qualified professional, believe me, there was plenty of qualified professionals in this case that didn't catch it. You do the best you think you can do. And unfortunately, this is how this ended. She tried to get help. That's the part the prosecution doesn't really want the jury to sit with. You know, it's like, yeah, she did try to get help over and over and over and over and over and over and over again and was failed every time. But we're just going to gloss over that part. You guys don't want to hear about that anyhow. It's icky. It doesn't make her the evil monster that we need her to be for the horrible, horrible things that she did. No, you're right. It doesn't. It actually explains what went wrong. The jury will, though. They will hear. They have been hearing, especially on cross. Lindsay Clancy wasn't hiding from doctors. She wasn't avoiding treatment. She was going to appointment after appointment, provider after provider, and getting prescribed medication after medication. Zoloft first, which according to Patrick appeared to align with her insomnia getting worse. Then she went 48 hours without sleep and drove herself to the emergency room. She got more prescriptions, Ativan. Then she got referred to a new provider because the previous one left the practice. Then more medications, benzodiazepines. Patrick testified that Lindsay kept a journal tracking every pill she took. She always took her medications as instructed, according to him. Under cross-examination by defense attorney Kevin Reddington, Patrick said it plainly. The defense asked whether Lindsay was going to doctors to seek out drugs because she was an addict. Patrick's answer was she wasn't trying to get off meds. She was trying to get on the right meds. And anyone who confuses this, Lindsay Clancy is someone shopping around to get high, is a fucking idiot. I'm sorry, if that's your argument on this, you hear anybody arguing that she's shopping for doctors just to get these meds for recreational fun use? Well, bless your heart. Bless your heart that you've never been close enough to see this shit in action, because you don't know how egregiously wrong you are and how egregiously offensive your ignorance is to those who have been in these situations. She checked herself into McLean Hospital for inpatient treatment in early January 23, weeks before the killings. McLean is one of the most respected psychiatric institutions in the country. She went voluntarily, and Patrick told the jury she was terrified to go. She was scared, didn't want to go. It was her second time at the ER. I said, you have to go, and she went. She left a day early to be home for her daughter Cora's birthday party. At no point did a single medical professional tell Patrick Clancy that Lindsay should not be left alone with the children. Not one. Not any at the office visit, not at the ER, not at McLean Hospital. Nobody said it. The man who left the house for 30 minutes on January 24th to pick up children's medicine from CVS and take out from a restaurant did exactly what every provider in her care allowed him to believe was safe. And Reddington made a point the jury isn't going to forget. He established that Patrick had left Lindsay alone with the children for much longer stretches in the months before the killings. You could argue that was stupid. It might have been. He might look back and go, that might have been the best idea. But again, put yourself in his shoes. And it's a hard one to do, honestly. Trips to New York, skiing weekends, brunch outings, days at a time, not minutes. Also, keep in mind her parents or his parents had come to help as well, as opposed to a 3-minute trip to CVS and a 30-minute trip to a restaurant, Reddington said. Nobody raised an alarm during any of those longer absences, but the prosecution's entire theory of premeditation depends on the idea that Lindsay sent Patrick out to create a window of opportunity. The defense is saying the system gave her an open window every single day and never once told anyone to close it. The defense also filed a motion on July 29th asking the prosecution to stop telling the jury that Lindsay searched for ways to kill. Reddington told the court those were searches for S methods, not homicidal planning. A woman researching how to end it for herself is not the same as a woman planning on someone else's demise. The prosecution knows that distinction matters, which is exactly why they've been framing it the way they have. The motion forces the court to decide whether the jury hears the truth or the prosecution's convenient repackaging of it to the way they feel it's going to be evil enough. Here's the thing. You're prosecuting a case. You're not making a promo for television. Words matter. What gets in front of that jury matters. Sensationalized bullshit is not your job as a prosecutor. Then came the prosecution's move on the pills. ADA Shannon Buckingham walked 9 prescription bottles in front of the jury. Many of them still contained pills. She asked Patrick, there were a lot of pills prescribed, but not a lot of pills taken, correct? Patrick's answer, it's possible that not a lot were taken. Think what the prosecution is actually arguing there. They want the jury to believe Lindsay Clancy wasn't really over-medicated because she didn't take all of the pills. What does it actually prove? It proves the medical system prescribed a battery of powerful psychiatric medications and they didn't answer adequately or didn't adequately monitor whether she was taking them, whether they were working, or whether the combinations were doing more harm than good, or even checking for combinations to begin with. Providers are writing prescriptions and moving on. That's not evidence of a calculating woman. That's evidence of a system on autopilot. And when you're being prescribed a 30-day supply of this and then 10 days into it, another prescriber says, no, don't take that. Take this. You can stop those. You're going to have a pill bottle that's nearly full. This is just basic math that when you twist it and turn it around, she didn't take her medicine. No, she was prescribed another one that they said, do this one instead. And another one, do this one instead. And another one, do this one instead. And another one, do this one instead. Mix it with this maybe. And another one, do that one instead. And another one after that. And it goes on 13 different times. That, kids, is how you end up with a lot of pill bottles with a lot of pills still in them. And also why you have a very righteous civil lawsuit against the providers for their tic-tac handing out way of dealing with benzodiazepines, SSRIs, antipsychotics, and God knows what else. Here, have a little of this. It's not free sample day at the Sam's Club. Buckingham also established that Lindsay was prescribed a maximum of 2 to 3 medications at any given time, not the entire list simultaneously. The prosecution thinks that helps their case. I'm not sure it does. It's basic math. A woman being cycled through a pharmaceutical revolving door, getting a new prescription every few weeks without anyone pausing long enough to figure out what was actually happening inside her brain, doesn't look like a woman getting proper care. It looks like a system covering their ass. The prosecution also called 2 additional witnesses who spoke with Lindsay by phone on the evening of January 24th. Angela Krause, a CVS manager, said Lindsay called asking about children's medication and that it was a very normal interaction. Sarah Shulgin, a hostess at 3V Restaurant, said Lindsay placed the takeout order at 5:10 and nothing seemed unusual. The prosecution's argument is straightforward. She sounded normal on those calls, therefore she was functioning. Therefore, she was not psychotic. But psychosis doesn't show up in a 30-second phone call about a dinner order. Psychosis isn't slurred speech. It isn't confusion about whether you want the salmon or the chicken. A person experiencing a psychotic episode can sound perfectly coherent to a stranger on the phone and be in completely different reality in her own mind. I know that's a scary thought to think of, and processing it makes you go, oh shit, there could be psychotic people around you right now. Yes, there could. There probably is. We don't like to live in that reality, that world, or understanding that that is, in fact, the world we live in. Too spooky, too scary, too icky. So we tell ourselves that's impossible. They're shaking in the corner. They can't make up their mind over the chicken or the salmon because of this. Like, no, that's not what that is. It's not how that looks. And just because you don't understand it doesn't mean it's real. Because, you know, when I accept it doesn't mean it's not real. I mean, again, if you don't understand it, bless your heart, consider yourself fucking lucky that you've never been close enough to it to have to understand it, to have to get over that hurdle of no way. Really? That's how the brain can work? Yeah, way. It is. Sorry. I know. But the sooner everybody comes to the table and deals with reality on reality terms, the sooner we can actually start helping people out there that need help when they're in situations like this. The prosecution is asking the jury to diagnose Lindsay Clancy's mental state based on a takeout order. That's not evidence. I don't even know what the hell that is. I said from the start of this trial that I believe this case should not have been brought to trial the way it was. The question was never whether Lindsay Clancy killed Cora Dawson or Callan. She did. Everyone in the courtroom agrees on that. The only question is, what was happening inside her mind on January 24th of 2023? And after 2 days of testimony from the prosecution's own lead witness, the father, the ex-husband, the man who found his children in the basement, the story the jury heard isn't a story of premeditation. It's a story of a woman who begged for help, who got shuffled through a medical system that prescribed without monitoring, who checked herself into one of the best psychiatric hospitals in the country, and who was sent back into the same house with the same children and the same untreated crisis. Not one provider told the one person responsible for her safety to not leave her alone with them. That's not premeditation. That's abandonment by every system that was supposed to intervene. Patrick Clancy looked visibly overcome before he left the stand. He is expected to return to testify for the defense. He has since divorced Lindsay, remarried, and moved to New York. He told The New Yorker in 2024, "I wasn't married to a monster. I was married to someone who got sick." The jury will visit the former Clancy home in Duxbury on Friday. They're going to walk through the bedroom. They're going to see the window. They're going to stand in the basement. They're going to carry that with them through 6 to 8 more weeks of testimony for more than 180 witnesses. My guess is the jury's going to hang. I don't see how 12 people hear everything Patrick Clancy said and come back unanimous on first-degree murder, but that's my read. This trial is just getting started. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack. and YouTube. The links are in the description. We'll continue our conversations right there. If you want to hear trial audio, like I said, every single day we're bringing it to you as it drops all throughout the day, right there on our podcast feed. If you're watching us on YouTube, take us with you on the go. There we go. It's right there. Take us with you on the go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, whatever you use for your podcast. We're there in audio form. You can binge away and get the trial coverage. Gavel to gavel, if you will. So check that out. Okay, we'll continue the conversation, like I said, in the comments section. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.